Thanks for tuning in to the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of our nation's heroes and their families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, there's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member if you get something out of today's episode. And you also have to go interact with the video somehow. Hit
comment,
the like button.
Like.
Review. If you're on Spotify right now, take the 2 seconds. I'm going to wait two whole seconds. You can open up the reviews. There's 2 seconds. Open up the reviews. Leave a review.
Really great is we actually now have video playing on Spotify.
Yeah. So you can see us.
So while you're driving, you can check us out. Don't do that.
Or do. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
We're not telling you how to live your life.
Our guest today is Candace Bryant. She is the founder and current executive director of the National Ranger Association. She's got a very interesting background. She has no military affiliation, but runs a military nonprofit. We're here to hear her story today and discuss what the National Ranger Association does and how they give back to the community. So welcome, Candace.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for coming out.
Thanks.
All the way from Austin, Texas.
Yeah, north of Austin. You got to put that
around
north of Austin. I'm in Leander.
Okay. Okay. How do you like it out there?
I love it.
It's a beautiful city.
Beautiful city.
It's just so jam-packed all the time.
All the time.
Very busy.
Texas loves its construction. I think it just loves having constant construction.
Well, I paid the $20 today to drive toll all the way down.
Fancy toll roads.
Uh-huh. Yes. Fancy toll roads. That's great. So not originally from Texas.
No.
So where are you originally from?
I would claim Ohio. I was born in Oscoda, Michigan on an Air Force base. My dad was very briefly in the Air Force. So that's where I was born, but grew up and raised in Ohio and then moved here from Columbus, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how was, how did you find yourself navigating into the military, field, if you will. So you kind of told me before the show that you weren't interested in that kind of world at all. You were more into, was it baseball?
Yeah. So first of all, I think I just absolutely have to say, people ask me all the time, how did this happen? And I say, well, the only thing that I could say is divine, a divine intervention that this, a lot of people walk through life and they don't know what their purpose is, or they're struggling to find. Well, my purpose was laid before me. I didn't claim it for a while, but laid before me. And that will come out in the story. But I moved to Columbus because I was working with a fast pitch softball team. Okay. And it was a team that had moved to Columbus after, and this is where my dates are going to get funky. I think it was the 1996 Summer Olympics. The stadium was built in Columbus, and we had the gold medal softball team. And so our team moved into that stadium. So I moved down there, wanted to be a general manager of a baseball team. Within 6 months, I was calling my then live-in boyfriend, who's now my husband of 20 plus years, saying, I don't have a job when I come home. I don't know what we're going to do, but I don't have a job because I quit.
And it was just so miserable.
You weren't, I want to say maybe I was making $13,000 a year. And that's really showing the times too, but it just, you weren't making much money. And the general manager that I had moved down there with was recruited basically into the major leagues and they brought in somebody else that just was not the right fit for me. And one of the things that I would be able to share throughout my life is I really don't sit, I'm very intolerant of people who are disrespectful of one another. And so I was unwilling to sit in a place of feeling disrespected. And I was like, I could go out and I could do graphic design work and have my own business. And, and in essence, that's what I did. But a headhunter who had become a really good friend of mine, she called and she says, I have somebody that you need to meet. And I met him and he was hired to raise the money. He was running a fundraising consultancy out of North Georgia. And he was hired by the National Infantry Association to raise the money to build the National Infantry Museum.
Okay.
And so he was offering a lot more money than I was making. And what was great is he had this office in downtown Columbus and a really nice place. And he said, I could still run, do my business, perfect. Out of the office space. So he wasn't limiting that. So it was a really great opportunity a young woman. But I said, look, I don't know anything about the military. I don't really need to know anything about the military, and I'm not a hierarchy person. Like, that just feels earned, like it should be earned for me, not just because of something that you wear on your chest. Now, you remember, I was very young, very bold, in my words, when we're young, the things that we say, because we don't have perspective. And not that I wish that I could take any of that back, but he said, don't worry about that. I just need you to answer the phones, some research, that kind of stuff. And so I accepted the position, and the first thing that I had to do was take this binder, and they were full of unit associations across the world, and I needed to call on them, and they were going to be the first pass at small money for the museum. Okay. So we're talking $1,000 to $5,000, in gifts. And so I needed to verify, were the organizations still, did they exist? Because at that time, we were still, World War II veterans were still, they were, they were starting to leave us, mm-hmm. but they were still kind of going strong. And Korean War vets, sure. Vietnam vets, mm-hmm. So were the organizations in existence, and would we be able to call on them, pull them into the project? And so what happened, I can't remember how many months it took me, several months to get through these binders and lay this, but I describe it as like the Grinch who stole Christmas. I, my shriveled up heart just grew, and I got the best American military history lesson that I think anybody could ever pay for. It was very infantry, focused. So sure. I got the infantry military lesson, and I had pen pals across the world for many years. I kept in touch with a lot of the folks that I talked with. And I think what happened during that period, one of the things happened is I ingratiated myself with a lot of folks, and I built a vernacular that a civilian wouldn't be able to build, sure. Very quickly. And so I started to walk in confidence in the Columbus area. I was invited to military events, and I understood what people were talking about. I could contribute to the conversations in a mm-hmm. meaningful way. And people started to take notice. They're like, who is this young woman? Because I was like 21 years old. I was probably 100 pounds soaking wet, at the time. So just a scrawny little thing. And I left that organization. And I'm probably getting ahead of where you want to be, but I left that organization. And at the time, the commander of the Airborne and Ranger Training Brigade told his staff that he wanted them to go find that woman. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where my story began.
Interesting.
With the Ranger community.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful kind of entrance into it. I'm curious with, in the 90s, kind of in the mid 90s, we didn't have a lot of the prominent military and veteran support organizations mm-hmm. like there are today, especially post 9/11. So what kind of organizations did you see that you were working closely with, or at least that you saw were kind of relatively affecting the veteran community? Mm-hmm. What organizations?
I don't even know if I could answer that question, because I was still so, like you said, it wasn't prominent. And part of the reason why it wasn't prominent is because, frankly, the military community can be very elitist and very exclusive. And so being a civilian, trying to help the community, at that time wasn't really embraced. It definitely wasn't embraced as much as it is now. So I think that was part of it. And then as more and more people became active and they started developing their own kind of subgroups and organizations and support. But I, too, at that time in my life, you've got to remember, I was being carried away. None of this was a part of my plan, mm-hmm. quite literally living every day, day by day, and taking every step as I step forward. And so I wasn't in a place where I was trying to understand everything, like the full landscape. I was just doing like that next little morsel that was in front of me mm-hmm. at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers your question.
That does. That does answer yeah. the question. Very interesting dynamic. And one of the reasons why I bring it up is because we've seen that change so exponentially over the recent years, is civilians are now being welcomed into the military for their mm-hmm. expertise on how to restructure systems and establish new fundamentals for the military. Back then, it's a little bit different. You're right. That hierarchy was much more prominent. Mm-hmm. So navigating that, especially as a woman, had to be difficult.
You know, the first few years that I started working with the Ranger community was, I think the reason why I have a really great reputation today was because of those first few years. Mm-hmm. People that are still involved, they know, like they know everything that happened and that I went through. And it's like, if she can survive that, then she's got to be like, she's got to be one of us. Like I mentioned, Hazen Barron, it was Colonel Hazen Barron. He said, go find that woman. I got a phone call one day. It was from the S5 at the ARTB. And he's like, Miss Westenhauser, I wasn't married at the time. He's like, Colonel Hazen Barron would like to meet with you. If you don't mind, what we'd like to do is come meet with you. We'll kind of talk to you about what he wants to talk to you about. We'll escort you out. And then when we drive you back, we didn't kind of debrief on everything.
Okay.
So here I am. I left the organization that I left not in great terms. And I had really kind of made another big, bold stand. And all of a sudden, I mean, who does that happen to? Who gets a phone call? I mean, it kind of sounds like a little bit Mission Impossible-ish. It is a true story.
This message will self-destruct.
Yeah. Right?
Find me that woman.
So they meet me at like Panera Bread and we go over some stuff and they drive me out. And this was a time when the ARTB was in the probably, but I want to say 8 miles into the middle of the tree line. Right? You would drive out there. None of the armor school existed. Mm. So you're driving kind of this windy road out to ARTV. And I walk in in the morning and everybody is in Ranger panties. and it was kind of like everything was in my face. But there was one woman around, and that was the brigade secretary.
Okay.
So I would say within at least 10 miles, I was the only woman probably out there. And that really, you know, kind of that hit me. It's a very different environment now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different inclusive environment. But at that time, that was the environment that I was walking into. And sure. I think God's timing is perfect and everything. And that I was young enough and bold enough and dumb enough and didn't know enough about what I was doing to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, so when Colonel Barron, you know, he basically said, and I believe these were his words, I might, you know, I don't know. It was very similar, but he said, young lady, if you could sell me to a lifetime membership to an organization that gives two shits about me and I give two shits about it, I believe you could probably sell just about anybody on anything. And he said, we've got some issues here, and I'd like to lay them out for you and see if you would consider being a part of it.
Mm, that's a very cool opportunity.
Yeah.
Oh, how are you?
Unique.
Well, yeah, what did you think at the time, especially at such a young age, being offered something like that?
And I think for me, what happened internally, right?
Again, the Ranger panties.
It was the Ranger. It was totally the Ranger panties. And there's many other stories.
I'm sure there are.
I think what happened for me at the time, I come from a divorced family. Mm. You know, my relationship with my mother is not real strong. Didn't really have much of a relationship with my dad. And I was independent from the time, basically, I was 15 years old. And I walk into this environment, and a man saw something in me, a distinguished man saw something in me that nobody had ever seen in me before.
Sure.
And I think more than anything at that time was like how that made me feel, how that made me rise, how that made me feel elevated. And because of his faith and belief and trust and commitment, because he made a big commitment to me and all of that, I wasn't going to look back. Like, that's, you know, they introduced me to the Ranger Creed and I, you know, I adopted it as my own. And just basically that is how I've lived my life from that moment forward. And so the Ranger community has been my community, has been my family. And that's where it, and that's where it started.
No, that makes absolute sense. I mean, your background shares so much symmetry with a lot of special operations. And I'm sure that many young men within battalion found themselves in the same exact shoes you found yourself in, just on, you know, different sides of the fence at that point. But I'm sure that recognition, being seen, understood when coming from a broken family, you'd be surprised how many special operators and military members in general come from the same exact background seeking that very thing. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you found it in your own way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Embraced it as your own family almost.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, the first few years were rough. What that commander did, what Hazen did for me is he said, I can give you 2 years. And he said, in those 2 years, you know, we've got limitations. He's like, I can't pay you anything. I can't offer you a job. Oh. I need, you know, in essence, plausible deniability, you know, and in all of this. He says, I think you could work your way into something. And he said, in those 2 years, you'll be my person. And this was surrounding the Best Ranger competition. So not all things, you know, Ranger school, surrounding the Best Ranger competition. Mm-hmm. And he said, I will make sure that everybody knows that you're the person that is going to be making the decisions. You're the person that people need to go through. And if he hadn't done that, if he had not been committed to that, it wouldn't have worked. It never would have worked. But he, you know, he kind of dug in, and as you can imagine, in an environment full of men where women weren't around, now you've got a 21-year-old woman who is saying that they're going to do something a certain way, or something's going to change, or, that there is a different and better way. You can imagine folks weren't on board with that.
I mean, it just wasn't. A little bit of pushback.
Yeah, I would say quite a bit of pushback, not only internal to the Airborne and Ranger Training Brigade at the time, but also the folks that who wanted to work with the Ranger community.
Okay.
So industry partners, they didn't want to have to go through me. They want to go directly to the source. They want to go directly to the HUA, right? And so what we were trying to do is create things where we were operating legally within joint ethics regulations. Mm-hmm. We were following everything to the T so that the Ranger community was protected.
Absolutely.
That we could have the things that we want to have. We can do the things we want to do. We can find our way to yes. But we have to follow rules. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to be able to do these a certain way. And then my presence was able to help create continuity.
Introducing Bubs Naturals, a lifestyle brand inspired by the legacy of Navy SEAL Glenn Bub Doherty. Born out of a commitment to adventure, wellness, and giving back, Bubs offers a range of nature-derived nutritional products designed to help you live life to the fullest. From their flagship collagen peptides, packed with over 20 grams of protein per serving, to their functional creamers with MCT oil for sustained energy all day long. Each Bubs product is crafted with care and quality. What sets Bubs apart? Well, with every purchase, Bubs donates 10% of their profits to charity through the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation. They support special operators and their families as they transition into civilian life. Join the Bubs community today and fuel your adventures with purpose. Visit BubsNaturals.com to learn more. And be sure to use code MEDEVAC for 20% off your first order. That's MEDEVAC, all capital letters, when checking out at BubsNaturals.com. Mm.
So as people come in and out, they ebb and flow. Every 2 years, things change over. I stayed kind of consistent, making sure that things were happening and created that continuity within that environment.
Such a benefit.
So how did that look in the beginning, right? What was it what was the mess that you walked into, right? Because it seems to me like the colonel was like, oh, this is going to be, this is going to be a job. I got 2 years. You're not going to get paid. Here's a huge risk. What did that layout look like?
So at that time, the best ranger competition was just, so we were in like year 18 of the competition, right? We're getting ready to celebrate 40. So maybe it was, they had just completed year 17. And it was just starting to get noticed, like by industry, by media. We had the first media partners coming in wanting to televise. And people were wanting to provide resources with product and money. And because there wasn't systems and structure and a place for all of that to flow through, what was happening, it was landing in the hands of our active duty. It was putting them in situations that wasn't fair.
And
really,
the government is, as well. You can't take gifts. You can't take money in any capacity. So I'm sure that was a huge kind of hot spot.
Yeah, it was creating people to make decisions that they shouldn't have to make.
Sure.
And unfortunately, some people don't make great decisions, you know, when they're faced with that. And so there was a lot of that going on. And so he said, and we want this to be able to grow organically. And I see the writing on the wall. He says, I see the writing on the wall, what mess this could be, how much trouble we can get in. And he said, so I really want to invite you in to create something that's going to help protect to help protect the atmosphere, but keep it about the boys.
Yeah.
And that is something that has always resonated with me. And I still bring it up to today and today, probably to eye rolls and, you know, stuff as we advance and want to be bigger and better and do stuff. But I'm like, let's just keep it about the boys.
Yeah, at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, you know, that's what I'm fighting for. I'm fighting for tradition. I'm fighting for values. I'm fighting for, we don't have to make it bigger. We can kind of keep it smaller in some places. Like, let's keep it about us and not lose our heart, like keep the heart in it. So he was a very smart man. Like, I think that he just saw all of that laid out. And how was I the person? I don't know. And that's where I say it's just that at that time, it was just divine. Like,
right time and place and uniform. It kind of fell for you that way, huh?
Yeah, crazy.
So so you kind of get the keys to the castle.
I always say keys to the kingdom, right?
Yeah, keys to the kingdom. And they kind of, it's just trial by fire.
Yeah.
So he's like, you got 2 years to prove yourself, essentially, and you could walk into a position. So how did that feel, like going from, you know, obviously like as a kind of like a baseball team manager in Cleveland to, you know, moving on to the infantry museum, which was a much better situation, to no paycheck at all? Like, how did that look for you? How were you going to juggle that in your life?
So when I had left the National Infantry Association, and so in that time period, we had raised the first $30 million for the museum, and we had raised the money to put World War II Street behind, like if you're ever out there, there's a World War II Street behind the museum. That was a $2 million project to do that relocation and refurbish. So in my tenure at the organization, that's kind of what we did. And we had just started to birth what is now the National Infantry Foundation. The National Infantry Foundation is kind of that money entity that supports the museum in its total. So I stepped out right before the foundation became kind of in its own. And then they ended up raising, what was it, a $90 to $100 million project, I think it was, at the end of the day.
Wow.
And I had gotten a job at Columbus State University. And that's where they reached out to me. They found me there. And so I was working full time, you know, kind of in doing this. And it was within 3-4 years that I realized that I could do this for a living. And kind of what was happening is I was starting to bring in money. So we were developing resources at a rapid pace. But what was happening within the military was quite interesting. We would get phone calls. So like the first group that called was still friends with him to this day. he called about the forced recon challenge, that they wanted to start a forced recon challenge. And they're like, can you help provide introductions to industry members, right?
Sure.
And help resource that. And so I became friends with folks in the Marine Corps community and really helped initiate the Forced Recon Challenge and helped them establish an organization, how you can operate legally, you know, do all of those different things. And then it was, and I'll get them out of order, but, you know, it was the sniper community and the sniper competition, and then the Airborne Elite Fest in Rhode Island. And then, you know, and so I could go on. There was like six or seven different functions. And so
that's crazy.
What you know of Infantry Week, you know, now, like I can look at stuff and I'd be like, yeah, like I know the history of all of these things. Like I know how things started and kind of where they came from. So I ended up leaving that job and figuring out how to run a small business. Mm-hmm. And then Best Ranger became, or my relationship with the Ranger community became a part of that, but always, and everybody always knew, always my top focus.
Sure.
Like, you know, that this is where, at the end of the day, this is where, you know, the majority of the effort is going to go, because it was a driver for everybody else. So when you talk about like Rangers leading the way, you know, even in this case, really, when you look at all of the events and stuff that's happening in the military, the Ranger community, our influence on all of that is vast and significant.
Absolutely.
Even to this day, you know, I took three phone calls last week from different organizations. Mm-hmm. Like, can you introduce us? Yeah. Can you, you know, mentor us? Can you help us figure it out? And I'm like, well, back in the day, we were the only...
Yeah,
we were the only ones that existed. It's a tougher operating environment now. Yeah. Significantly different.
Very muddled. Can you talk about the Best Ranger competition for our audience who's unfamiliar with what the competition is, what its purpose is? Can you kind of cover that a little bit?
Yeah. So
as well as Infantry Week. Yes. Let's just pepper it all in there.
I'm Air Force. There. I have no idea what it means.
I think, you know, it's funny. And I have to say, kind of like echo what Christian says, is I think there's a majority of people in the military that don't even understand like that these competitions exist. You know, even Infantry Week, as an infantryman, I don't think I found out about Infantry Week until like the last couple of years, you know, after being out of the military, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. And I definitely want to hear kind of what that structure looks like, but also how the word gets out there, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, man, where do I start? Well, Best Ranger.
Yeah.
So Best Ranger was started in 1982 was the first competition. And it was actually, so what I love about this story is that there was an organization called the Cherbourne Rangers. And the Cherbourne Rangers was a group of businessmen out of Florida, the Tampa area, Tampa Clearwater area, was led by a man. His name was Dick Leandri, and just super committed to the military and supporting our military. And he ended up influencing a ton of things, a ton of different awards that are given to service members. And he had a heart for Fort Benning at the time. And in that time that he spent loving on Fort Benning, they met and became really good friends with General Grange, Lieutenant General Grange. And he was commander of the Ranger Department at the time. And then he was also CG, I think I'm saying that right, CG of Fort Benning for a time. Okay. So they had become friends. And it was Dick Leandri and the Cherbourne Rangers, along with General Grange, that created the Best Ranger competition. And so a lot of folks don't know, like, and this is what I love about this story. And I love being a civilian that supports the military and for the most part, usually quiet, like, is that a lot of things start with civilians who care. Mm-hmm. And so people really get behind the competition, like how fierce it is. And what I always tell people when I get a room full of people is like, but what makes it great is the fact that we still bring in all of these different elements. We bring the entire community together and we celebrate the entire community. And that really started with that group of civilian businessmen. There was a few veterans that were in the group, but civilian businessmen that got behind it.
I wonder what the first competition looked like. It probably was just like, you know, in a dirt pile, like, you know, just like a pull-up machine. You know?
We have some pictures. I want to say, I can't remember how many teams there were, but I want to say maybe just like 18 competitors. Yeah. It wasn't much, but
it's crazy to see, like, you know, kind of the first event and the current event. I mean, 40 years later, essentially.
Yeah, it's great. And so it just continued to grow and stay, you know, really relevant. I had a public affairs officer that told me, this was probably back in 2005, that said, Best Stranger isn't sexy anymore. You know? And I was like, what?
Like, excuse me?
Yeah, I know. Like, how dare you? No, like, we're always going to be sexy.
2005 in your parachute pants or what?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, no, we're sexy. So we try to keep it sexy. And that's part of what the National Infantry or National Ranger Association does, is try to come in and support in ways that try to help keep it modern, relevant, mm-hmm. And then sexy.
Mm, absolutely. Traditional and non-traditional, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about what the structure looks like today. So mm-hmm. for those who have zero knowledge of Best Ranger competition and what it represents, what can they expect if they were to go for the first time and watch this?
Well, you know, when Best Ranger started, it was just teams. It was a competition of teams within the Ranger department. And now it's a full Army competition. So we've got teams coming from and representing the entire Army. And I love that because it's the leaders of our Army that are all coming together, and then they're going to disperse and they're going to take what they learned. They're going to take what they picked up, not only amongst themselves, but amongst the entire community that came in. They're going to disperse that across the Army. And I love the fact that that is the case. If somebody was to come in and visit, I've got so many anecdotes, testimonials from people of, if you come in and allow yourself to be adopted, like, we want to adopt everybody that comes in, right? If you allow yourself to be adopted and take on the full experience, you will leave absolutely 100% feeling like a contributing member of the U.S. Army Ranger community without a shadow of a doubt. You will take pride. You will feel immense pride in not only what's going on out on the field of competition, but what's happening full circle around the community, how we embrace our own and then reach out and embrace all of those to follow. So I think that, you know, what you would experience, you're going to experience physical prowess on the physical, on the field of competition. And then you're going to feel a sense of community that you'll want to continue to be a part of.
Amazing. So what are some of the physical achievements these guys are pushing themselves through?
Mm-hmm. Well, it varies from year to year. I have no idea what to expect for this year, right?
Sorry about last year.
So there's a lot of common elements. So we're going to run them through obstacle courses because that's what we do, right? We do a lot of obstacle courses. They're going to be tested for, let me think of my words, for endurance. And with sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. And so the competition in and of itself is 3 days with no programmed rest. What we mean by that, no programmed rest, is that if you're at the front, you're golden, right? You just stay in the front because you're going to get a lot of rest as you wait for everybody else to kind of come in. When we have those four stops, I just said we don't stop, but when we have those stop periods and then a hard start where everybody, a mass start period. So those that are kind of in the first few positions are going to get to experience a little bit more rest than everybody else. And those that are in the back positions are just going to have to embrace the suck and keep on going because the competition is going to keep moving right after they, right after they come in. Mm. You're going to be tested on skills. Like just, you know, your just your everyday skills of being a ranger, but now under physical distress, sleep deprivation in front of everybody else. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're usually kind of isolated. Now you've got cameras and not well fed. You're doing the standard MREs. You know, we're not going to we don't bring in food. And then you're really not you have to tend to yourself medically. So we really kind of monitor the medical treatment to where nobody's going to get an unfair advantage. You're going to have to tend to yourself medically unless, of course, you're in a dire condition. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to deal with the weather, right? So in April in Columbus, Georgia, I tell people, you don't know if from one minute or another, you're going to have a tornado roll through. It's tornadic weather time. And I mean, we've had competitors out there strapping themselves to trees as tornadoes have gone through on certain years.
Clock doesn't stop.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. And you're dealing with the weather conditions. And so there's just not, you know, they're trying to create an authentic environment that's relevant to rangering at the time of the event. So like you said, as you can imagine, back in the 80s, things were very different than now. And even back when in the late 90s, early 2000s, the things that were important, like, and I still wish, like the Prusik climb, you know, because we were doing those. And now we do different things. It feels a lot more like on several different events, like what gyms do you go to? I can't think of names. But it
Lifetime,
feels
Lifetime, Gold's Gym, Planet Fitness.
Because that's the way people are training now. You know, it's a different training environment. Mm-hmm. And so I look at it and think, oh, this, you know, this feels kind of watered down. But they're like, Candace, this is the way we train.
Yeah.
You know, at the times, so we've got to give them their training environment. So.
And you're always implementing kind of new challenges every year, correct?
Trying. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that, on the National Ranger Association side is we try to take commander's intent, right? So what's the commander's intent for this year for the competition? One of the things in at the forefront of this year was modernization. Like what does that mean? Because we want to make sure rangers are at the tip of the spear as people are learning about or experiencing modernization within the Army. And so what can we find, integrate, and make possible that's going to put them in that position where they're showcasing these different pieces of equipment or different skill sets.
Okay. And, so you're taking modern elements from current combat and kind of implementing them as challenges.
Yes.
Like the, you know, like the gimbal with the saw and, you know, welding, this kind of stuff is, is relatively new over the last few years in the BRC, right?
Yes. Yep. And then we have to, things like that, you know, so Airborne and Ranger Training Brigade is a TRADOC unit. We don't get all of the really great equipment, you know, that's allocated to us. So there's a lot of trying to work with industry partners to help make that happen. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things in sitting in the position of the National Ranger Association that we try to interface on the, you know, on the military side, and then also on the industry side, and create this continuity between the two, but also have them both understand each other. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things for like a company to come in and provide dynamic breaching opportunities, right, within the competition, that company is making a sacrifice financially to do that. A significant sacrifice financially to bring the people in, to bring the equipment in, to do all of that stuff that we don't have allocated to us. And so to be in a position to help the military side understand that we want to recognize that sacrifice. We want to recognize that gift to us that they don't have to do this for us and really walk that. It's kind of like, it's like a tightrope at times, you know, really kind of walk that between the two elements so that we can continue to exist and continue to do the things that we've been doing. They don't just happen. We can always pull from military allocations, right? Yeah. But if we're going to showcase what's trending, what's cutting edge, what's modern, then we have to go out and ask for support.
Yeah, rely on the current industry partners for something like that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. All I can picture right now is talking about the modern warfare. I'm just picturing Rangers running from little drones now. That's part of the challenge. Seems to be part of modern combat.
So who is designing these courses?
For Best Ranger?
For Best Ranger.
So that it has changed, and you know, I don't want to say from changing from year to year, but it's going to be the a group out of Airborne and Ranger Training Brigade, whether that's at brigade level or whether that's at battalion level. Mm-hmm. And right now that sits at battalion level. So the 4th Ranger Battalion is going to be designing the competition that you'll see this year, and then it's, you know, pushed up the pipeline to be approved. And first, commander's intent always comes down. Like, you know, this is my intent for the competition, and then they fulfill it. Back in the early days when I was involved, I mean, it's so funny because we tried really hard to have a synthetic environment. This year, it didn't work. And as I'm kind of walking through all of that, I'm remembering the first year that I brought in laser shot to the competition. And that was probably, again, early 2000s, I'm thinking.
Okay.
And I brought him in. I'm like, we've solicited it. We're going to do this. It's like cutting edge stuff. And people just were so mad at me. Like, because they were, you know, you have to perfect it and you have to make it right for everybody. And it's something kind of new. And so, There's a little bit of influence, you know, from all sides. We lean on some industry partners and ask to, will you help us design ranges to make them really great, you know, a really great range package. So really leaning on various different people to help design, but ultimately it's going to be 4th Ranger Battalion this year.
Ah, beautiful. Beautiful. Can you talk about some of the particularly challenging moments you've faced, or like accidents or something that's happened within that has proved to be a substantial learning point for you?
Challenges constantly.
I bet.
You know, in coming back this year, so I told you I took 4 years away, stepped away from things. And so in coming back, it feels like, and I've said this probably every day, that we've gone back 25 years. It feels like the first days of when I walked in, some of the challenges that we're facing. And challenges exist within our own, like within our own environment, right? And so some challenges come to pass through, again, joint ethics regulations, an interpretation of legalities, of media support, like who handles media support, and just the way relationships work. And we fought a lot of battles in the early days to create a system that was working really well. And everybody was on board with that. And so we kind of navigated what I feel like 20 years of it got to be. I mean, it's never bliss because it's always going to be.
No events are ever going to be bliss.
Well, and in the military, it's like, no, 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 no. Up until the last minute. And then it's like everything just happens.
Yep. Yeah.
That's just the way that it works in the military. And I used to get so anxious about that stuff. I probably tore myself up. And now I can just be like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, it'll work itself out.
Like, yeah. It's going to work itself out. We're going to find a way to yes on this. But there are challenges, and some of them are within the DoD environment itself.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a story, a funny story maybe, of a ranger just horrifically embarrassing themselves on the course? I'm curious. I have to know.
I don't know if I could do that because I don't watch a lot of the competition.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I would say it was probably my 18th year and I had never been out. For the competition itself, I had never been out when they were running the Derby Queen, like getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, as they're coming in off of land navigation. And I was like, I want to go out and witness this. Like, I've never seen this part. And they're like, how do you do 18 years of the competition? Well, my job and my role is to take care of everything external to the competition. And so I'm back at brigade, I'm back in a trailer, I'm out in a parking lot, you know, trying to corral people, and I'm staying one step ahead. So, you know, Best Stranger, you have the event itself, and then we have several different external events that bring the community together. And so that's really kind of where my focus is.
Okay.
So I don't see all of the different things that happen. I mean, I could tell you, you know, from back room talk of, you know, just all the gaming that happens. I mean, rangers are going to be creative. And if you are not explicit about what the rules are, they're going to figure out a way to skirt around the intent.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying, right?
This is the juicy information I was looking for. This is it. I'm sure there's some very clever ways to get around. Anything off the top of your head?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Sorry. It's worth a shot for fishing. I always like to ask the funny stories because, like, when you're living in those moments, I could tell you, Adam would probably say the same thing. Is just you see those moments of people just absolutely like, this is it. Like, I had this guy, it was like monkey bars or something, face plants in the mud, turns around, looks up at this guy and just says, nope, as loud as possible. And that was the end of him. But it's like those stories that drive a lot of us to push forward and accomplish the mission. So I'm sure there's quite a bit of that too, is looking to your left and right of other teams and pushing yourself because you see how bad they're sucking.
Absolutely. And I love hearing stories. Like, I just saw a story the other day. I wouldn't say it's a story, but Jeff Struker is a really good friend of mine. We came to know each other through the Best Stranger competition. Jeff's he went on to be a chaplain, and now he is a pastor of a church in Columbus. But he competed twice in the competition, and he was introducing me to a former winner named Eric Turk. And I still haven't responded to the email, but I guess they met on a plane and they're kind of talking about how they met up. And so Eric was saying to him, I know I remember watching you out training one day and saying, what's he doing? And, you know, what's he training for? And they're like, oh, he's training for the Best Stranger competition. And at that time he's like, I want to be the best. I want to be him. Well, Jeff went on to win. And then Eric, kind of adopted that, inquired more, and then went on to compete and went on to win the competition as well. And so I love to hear, I mean, just like faceplant stories, but I love to hear like all the stories about how people are properly motivated or, you know, within themselves, how they inspire each other quietly, you know, and vocally.
Beautiful. Yeah. So the other competitions that you partake in as well. So there's like Best Sniper, and what are some of those other competitions? What do they look like?
Yeah. So I don't partake in them anymore, but have at different points in time in my career. They all look very different. Like Sniper competition, I loved it because it's an international competition. And so they bring in snipers from all over the world, which is just amazing. It's a fun thing to be a part of and to witness.
That's got to be cool to watch.
It is. It is.
Just reach out and touch someone from half a mile away or whatever it is.
And their mindset is so, I don't want to say different. It's just a very special mindset in the sniper community. You know, it was another one where I had to earn my way. And in my young years, I drank a lot. And, I did that to, I think, earn some credibility at the table. And it's an unhealthy way to earn credibility, you know, but we do that. And I remember this one night I was having this really hard time with this NCOIC that I had to work with. And we were not meshing, you know, on this competition, doing all of this stuff. And we get through it. The competition goes off well, and we're all at the Doubletree in Columbus at the bar. That's kind of where we all hung out. And he and I were starting to have a conversation. I was like, dude, like, what is it that we're going to have to do? Because we're going to have another year together. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it came about, but we decided to do one-for-one shots, right? So we line up this series of shots. Well, I was traveling all the time. I was working all these different events. And I had become quite good yeah. at this. I, you know, for whatever reason. And so I, you know, my claim is that I beat him at that competition, but that solidified our relationship. Why? I don't know. Why are we that way? But it solidified our relationship to allow the next 5 or 6 years, you know, to right. kind of progress. And that was the amount of time that I spent helping out with the sniper competition. Leap Fest is different. It's not in the infantry week, so I'm sorry. But it was really cool because it's another international event. And people would come in from all over the world. And it was just so much fun, the mentality of all these airborne guys,
yeah.
you know, coming in. And it's just...
Is that where you do the steak and eggs and breakfast?
In Rhode Island?
No, I'm talking about something else. It's a week after infantry week?
No, this was in... I think it happened in the summer okay. every year.
Okay. I'm talking about the wrong event.
Yeah, no, up in, I can't even remember the place in Rhode Island. Rhode Island is so small, we'll just say Rhode Island. it's just an amazing, amazing, cool event. And, you know, they say, what's the quote? Sit with warriors because the conversation is different, you know? It's the same thing. It's like, sit with our airborne guys, sit with our Rangers. The conversation is just different. It's a different feeling. It's a different atmosphere. And so I was professionalized. I grew up mm-hmm. in the environment. I was professionalized this way. And when I decided to step away from everything, people were like, oh my gosh, Candy, this is not going to be good. Like, you're going to struggle. And I was like, I can assimilate, you know, I'll adapt. And like, I think that you're going to have some of the same struggles that we have, you know, when we leave the community or are somehow separated from the community. And that was really kind of my story, or, you know, a big part of my story. But
yeah. Can you talk about your transition, stepping aside for a little while? You obviously had your own transition period. I mean, being with Ranger Battalion, or, you know, being, you know, a part of the Ranger community for mm-hmm. so long, you're in one specific area, mm-hmm. seeing this changeover for years now.
Yeah.
When you step away, you're going to have your own transition period, much like military members do.
Yeah. Well, this is a circle of trust, right?
Here. Yeah. No one's listening. Don't
Nobody's
worry.
Nobody's listening. So what was happening at that point in my career is I had spent 20 years doing things, and I think doing things quite well. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm proud of the work, you know, that I've done. And I was 40s, young 40s. And so I was getting older, and the guys were constantly staying young, mm-hmm. right? That I'm working with. So you're constantly working with young captains. I'm just going to say young captains. We'll just keep it there. And I wasn't like, it's like people didn't trust me. I had to rebuild trust every year. Mm-hmm. And that's exhausting. Absolutely. And you shouldn't have to do that. At a certain point. And so certain things were happening, decisions were being made, and I just didn't feel, I'll just be honest, I didn't feel respected. So I was taking ego hits. I can claim it now. Like, I was taking an ego hit after ego hit after ego hit. At the same time, my daughter, I have a daughter who's getting ready to graduate high school. And at the time she was going into middle school or had just started middle school. So I was traveling all over the country and doing all of these events. I was spending about 3 months away from home, doing everything. And I felt disrespected. I felt taken advantage of. And, those are not great feelings to have. Sure. Like, I never want to claim being a victim. And so anytime somebody kind of gets in that mindset of every day you wake up and I'm a victim again, you know, somebody's victimizing me. I realized that this was going on. And then my daughter was going into middle school, the most formative years of her young life. Mm. And my relationship at home was good at that time, but we had just come off of having a really difficult 5-year period. And I was like, something's got to change. I'm not growing personally, professionally, spiritually, as a wife, as a mother. And ultimately, I want to keep these relationships. Mm. I don't want to ruin the relationships. And when we get into a self-destructive mode, we ruin the relationships around us, right? Absolutely. We start to destroy everything around us because of Absolutely. The way that we feel inside. Mm-hmm. So I was recognizing all of this stuff that was going on, and I felt a little bit trapped because I didn't want to leave people in a bad position. Like, I've been doing this alone for pretty much alone. I mean, I had support people, but they didn't want to step up. You know, they were like, no, like, we see everything that goes on. No, we're good. And so I had to do this kind of this gradual roll off, trying to bring people into positions to learn, you know, what it was that I was doing. But I was like, I have to figure out what's happening in here, what's happening in my heart. And so I felt ashamed. I felt really bad because I was like, is the Ranger community going to not want, like, no longer want, are they gonna, what's the right word? Like, I'm a sellout. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. I never really liked the community. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, am I just leaving and turning my back on them? And so it was a really kind of difficult balance that I was kind of working through, but I had to do a complete step away. Like, I just had to do it. And in that time period, I really resounded myself to, I'm going to grow spiritually. That was a big thing. Like, if I'm not morally straight, if I'm not spiritually straight, then nothing else is going to kind of come along with it. Like, I've just got to figure that out. And I knew that I wanted and needed to be a better wife. You know, what did that look like? My husband, in all of these years, has sacrificed so much. Just a simple sacrifice of me being brutally honest, like, this community is a top priority for me. In my decision making. And how hard is that to hear on the other side of you? Like, if you're active duty, right, and your significant other marries you, they kind of marry into that profession, right? There's a little bit of, they know what they're adopting. My husband didn't agree to his wife become so engrounded in a community that she prioritizes above a lot of other things in her life. Like, he didn't agree to that. Sure. And so just navigating all of those different things, and then being the best mom that I could at the time and being home, you know, finding a way to be home. Mm-hmm. And so I stepped away, and then within a year we were in the middle of a pandemic, and that changed stuff for me, you know, professionally, like, what is it that I wanted to do? And I wanted to find a way to be able to contribute to the community, you know, after a few years, like, how can I contribute, but not step on anybody's toes, mm-hmm. not go backwards. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't want anybody to ever feel like I was trying to take over or anything like that. And another story of being divine is that I really poured into my church during this time period. I help work with women. I have a heart for women in my community, and so find ways to build up women in my community. And in that, I decided to take a season where I didn't want to lead. I just wanted to follow. I wanted to learn. I just needed to be a part of a group to where I could be vulnerable and honest and just really just dig into like who I was.
Yeah.
And so I'm navigating all of that. I'm in counseling. I'm going through EMDR therapy for like childhood stuff. I'm just going through all of this stuff. And I have this thing that's like laid on my heart. It was in December of last year. I woke up in the middle of the night. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was literally one of those things where I, you know, sat up and mapped it out on a napkin and then got up the next morning and I wrote it out on a piece of paper. And this vision was a Ranger Hall of Fame and Community Center. And I like had this whole vision kind of laid out for it. And I was like, I think this is my next step. I think this is how I'm going to be able to contribute to the community. I'm positioned to be able to do this. I know how to raise money. I know the people. I know the movers and shakers. And I've got all of my relationships intact. Like, we can do this, and it's time. So I started developing relationships to make this happen. And about 4 months later, right after Best Ranger last year, I get the call from the president of the organization saying, Candace, I hate to do this, but we need to ask you to come back. And that's kind of the reason why I'm back into the Best Ranger hemisphere at the moment. But now with the focus of how do we get to 50 years?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be me at the helm of that.
Okay.
And so what does that look like? How do we bring in, how do we help inspire somebody?
Another you?
That's going to want to do these things from a position of heart. Because it's got to be.
Absolutely.
Know, it's got to be from the heart because it's not lucrative.
You have to be passionate about serving that community. Absolutely. And I think an interesting piece is that you were there for so long, whereas military members, you know, you're there for 3 or 4 years at a time where you bounce between bases. So you're constantly seeing that turnover, but you were kind of a lighthouse. You were there for 20 years, and being able to watch it grow for that amount of time and being able to shift and guide its direction over that course of time is probably a very, prominent reason why it's gone the direction that it has, because you've given so much and you've been there for, that amount of time to be able to help it grow in that direction.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to be able to find somebody, or what do you do? How do you inspire somebody young, or is that a plan of yours? Do you want to insert someone to be there for another 20 years? I mean, it seems to be the best bet. It worked really well in this area. And as we see in the military, when you have a high turnover rate every 4 years, well, then decisions are getting changed left and right. And by the time you're 10 years in, you've made two lefts and two rights, and you're just where you started to be.
Yeah.
To begin with.
Yeah. I mean, it would be wonderful if somebody could come in and at least make a 10-year, kind of a 10-year commitment, which in the world today, it's very hard to make a commitment beyond tomorrow. It's rapidly changing.
It is.
And so that's hard to do in and of itself. But somebody that's got that conviction, that heart, that passion, that, just has a passion for the community.
Selfless service as well. I mean,
absolutely.
That's so huge. And today, you hit it on the head as well. We have attention spans, the length of what a gnat has. And, how do you find that passion and instill that into someone and say, you're a part of something bigger than yourself.
Right. And what makes the position difficult, right, is you've got the relationship with the active military side. And so that's not easy. Like, you have to understand your role at the end of the day. And we're in a support role. And it's kind of, I was telling my husband, I'm always speaking about lead from behind, don't lead from the front. Like we were talking about it so much last night, just in psychology. And this position is very much lead from the back, from the back. You've got to have quiet leadership. You know, have to know how to build trust. You have to have interpersonal skills, the soft skills, like crazy, like mad. And so it kind of makes it difficult sometimes, I think, from people who have served. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't change the mindset into from the back, you know, kind of pushing for it and understanding that role, it can be difficult. And things aren't always going to go your way. And you're going to want to kick the wall and punch somebody. And like, you know, all the time, like those things are going to happen. And then you just got to like calm it down and be like, well, it's yours. You know, at the end of the day, I've spent all this time with Best Stranger. Am I proud of where we are? Do I understand kind of the beginnings and all that? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's a product of the Department of Defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a product of MCOE. It's a product of, you know, three layers of active military. And then there is this support role, you know, that maybe we get a chance to influence something. And
well, you certainly have over the last over 20 years of experience. You've definitely influenced, but you know, I'll venture to say probably been more effective than some Rangers out there that I've known. You know, but you've built something pretty incredible, and we're excited to be a part of it again this year, which is going to be
great.
Thank
you for being a part.
So I just, you know, I know the story, but do you want to tell the story of how kind of we got connected and, you know, kind of how Terra Arma has helped support the event?
I actually probably don't know that real story, because that was the gentleman that was before me that had served over the last 4 years, I think helped usher in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just really kind of playing catch up on some relationships and really trying to honor what has been established and learn and be curious as to why is this relationship important and significant? And then how do I go about honoring it and elevating it, for all of us?
I think that my point was, is that collaboration with external organizations is what, you know, kind of sets the stage for Best Ranger competition, is being able to work with other organizations and bring in their subject matter expertise. So I'm sure you're finding that balance with just a plethora of partners, you know, at the event. But we're excited for this year. Is going to be our second year where we're supporting it at Terra Arma, coming in and doing the base layers for you guys, for the boys, if you will.
Yes.
So it's going to be great to be out there this year as well. So we'll get to see that firsthand.
Well, thank you so much. I just say, you know, I truly, and I hope that's one of the takeaways, you know, this year, that in every way that you experience stuff, that things are just really heartfelt. Thank you, you know, with gratitude, because it will not. And this is what I try to explain to the commanders that come in. Will Best Stranger continue to happen without support of our industry partners, of our collaborators? Yes, you will continue to have a competition. There's no doubt about that, because that seems to be what we like to go back to when there's sometimes a disagreement, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, you can have that. But it will not, absolutely will not feel the same. It will not be carried out the same. It will not have the same results, and it will not have the same impact. The reason why we're able to have the impact that we are, because of all of the relationships and collaborations and supporters that are at the table. Best Stranger, you know, you mentioned it earlier about recruiting. You know, we're in the middle of a recruiting crisis, right, for our military and our army. Best Stranger has the opportunity and does step into the role of, has the opportunity to be a major recruiting effort. And so sometimes I get a little bit like when I get into conversations or somebody tries to create a stop in something, or I'm like, why would you want to do that? Like, why would you not want everybody feeling so full of pride to where they can't stop talking about it to the people that are around them, where they can't stop, they can't help themselves? Like, that's what we need to be inspiring and instilling in people, right? At every step of the way. And it's too easy. Like, it's really ultimately too easy to do. So thank you for embracing that.
Beautiful, beautiful. And, you know, I'm excited. And huge shout out to my Ranger buddy, Adam Green, for getting us connected and, you know, getting year number two set up. So we're excited for the collaboration and the work that we're going to be able to do together. So thank you so much for coming out, sharing your story. Is there anything last minute words you want to say to the audience? You know, how to get prepared, you know, maybe do 80 pushups minimum in 2 minutes or what?
No, I would say more not on the physical side. Just figure out a way, to get involved in whatever it is that you are being pulled to get involved of. Breathe life into it. We are all significant and more powerful beyond our wildest imaginations. We just got to lean into everything. I love that about the Ranger community. I love that about Best Ranger, that we emulate that, like we live that. But if we've got two more minutes, in going through this Ranger Hall of Fame thing, Sergeant Major Greenway said to me, and it has stuck with me, he said, "Candace, I love what your vision is, because the Army does not own Ranger. Ranger is a spirit. And what we're creating or thinking about creating is a place where people can become a part of, that can get fairy dust of the Ranger spirit and figure out how to carry that inside of them." And so that's what I would encourage people to do. Like, get bitten. Is that right? Get bitten by the Ranger spirit, be a part of this family, and carry that on into the communities that you serve.
Beautiful. I am inspired to join the Rangers again. Absolutely.
Once more. Where can we find you, Candace? If people want to donate or give back or get involved somehow, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, the best place is we've got a website. Unfortunately, it's National RGR Association. I got to make it a little bit difficult. It's a great place to learn about, and it's going to spear off into bestrangercompetition.com.
Okay.
So a great place to go to learn more about us. And I would say that would be the best place.
Fantastic. Yes. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Candace. It's been a real pleasure. You are an inspirational figure in not only this community, but to the military community as a whole. We really appreciate your service and giving so many years to the community.
Thank you. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Thank you.
This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us today. If you're interested in checking out the National Ranger Association, just punch that into Google. It'll probably be the first thing that comes up. They're one of one. Be kind. Share this. Interact with it somehow. We'll see you next week.
And always remember, Rangers lead the way. Till next time.
Bye.